Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers Network podcast. Yes, we are now a podcast. We are audio and video, so you can more than just listen. You can also watch on YouTube or on Facebook Live. So I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. But if this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers Network. Now, each week, this show will continue to address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, learning more about ourselves, and maximizing our happiness, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, our topic today, which is also the title of our guest's new book, is Becoming an Empowered Empath, Setting Clear Boundaries and Embodying One's Intuition. Our guest, Wendy DeRosa, is the founder of the School of Intuitive Studies, where she has been helping people develop intuition and experience personal transformation for over two decades. Wendy is a popular faculty member at the Shift Network and has filmed two programs for the Mind Valley's Spiritual Growth Channel, something that I've watched and enjoy very much. She has been featured in Psychology Today, The Huffington Post, The Shift Network, Better Connecticut CBS, Thrive Global, Origin, and many other local and national media outlets. Wendy, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure. And, you know, I was thinking about this, and I was realizing that when I talk to people or I mention anything in regards to an empath, it's a word that many people have heard, but they don't really know what it entails. So I think to start off with, if you could tell us a little bit about what is an empath and how can someone tell if they are one also?
Yeah, absolutely. So an empath is someone who feels the energy of other people, and that can be interpersonally. It can be walking into a room and feeling the vibe of a room. It can also be feeling the collective, everything that's going on in the world. For example, some people who identify as empaths will say, here's some examples. They would say, I walk into a room or I'm having a conversation with somebody and I walk away feeling terrible and they walk away feeling great. Or I feel fatigued. I feel run down. I can't separate my emotions from someone else's emotions. I take everything on in my body. And then at the deeper level, I can't feel myself. Those are some examples of what, you know, someone who might be an empath would experience.
Well, if someone is feeling some of these things, how can they find out more about it? But also, how can they hone it? Because I think, as you said, you can walk into a room or you can be around people. And I'm one of those that, and I don't know if it's my investigator training or what it is, but I think that I take on a lot of other people's feelings or their emotions or their energy. But I think I've been trained a little bit to think about it or use it as an investigator. How does one, if they're going to control it a little bit and not feel like you're taking on so much and you realize that, you know, you've now gone home and gone, oh my God, I feel drained, but you didn't really do anything except take on everybody else's energy.
Yeah, I think you brought in a good point regarding the training piece on how to be with it. So I'll say this is that sometimes people who identify as an empath will say, I'm an empath, therefore I take on the energy of others. but they're actually two separate experiences that happen. The empath will feel empathy, empathetic. They will feel the energy. They will have empathy for the individual, and they might, on an intuitive level, feel what someone else is experiencing. Taking on the energy and going home with it is called overly empathic. And that essentially means that around my energy body, I have this field. I have this, we call it the auric field. It's a boundary. And energy has crossed over that boundary, and now it's in my space. And I can't separate myself from that energy. And they're actually two different experiences. So much of what I talk about in the book is about what you're saying. It's how do you stay with yourself and be in relationship with others, have empathy for them, but not lose yourself or merge energetically and lose boundaries.
Well, and one of the ways in which you state in your book that to stop taking on other people's energy not only requires an understanding of the physical body and symptoms, but also an understanding of the energetic body. So if you can share a little bit about what that means.
Sure, absolutely. So we don't learn about the energetic anatomy in school. We learn about the other systems, the nervous system and muscular and skeletal, but we have this energetic anatomy or energetic system that underlays the nervous system in the body. And in it, we carry a great deal of our energetic imprinting. We also have our chakras, we have our meridians, we have the central channel of our body that fuels life force throughout our whole body. And what I focus on in the book is that there is a chakra system and there is an energetic anatomy. And for us to understand how to hold boundaries for why our energy is, why we're more sensitive or taking on so much, we have to understand the energetic anatomy too, and what's happening in the body that's making us, you know, overly empathic.
Now, so you mentioned the chakras, but what do they have to do with being an empath? In other words, I mean, why can one person feel this and recognize it, and while another one may be completely oblivious to it?
Right. So in the energetic anatomy, I focus primarily, well, what I talk about in the book is that the empathic intuition sense in the body is related mostly to the lower three chakras of the body. And they're part of our energetic anatomy we don't always connect to. It's it's about grounding into these lower power centers. But the second chakra in particular is the empathic power center. That's the power center that we feel everything underneath the table, so to speak. And why some people would feel and why some people might not feel energetically sometimes has to do with the nature of the human being. But someone who is empathic, we all are empathic when we're born. I mean, that's the first sense that develops in the womb, because we have to feel, we feel through our sentient body. But then we are born into our human experience. And in that human experience, we develop our belief systems, our attachments, our bonding, our sense of belonging, and how we're going to survive in our social structure. And that's you know, formed by typically our family of origin or the people who raise us. When we're raised in environments where a sensitive little being has to essentially, their sense of survival and safety is that it coincides with marinating in an environment where there's fear, or where there might be trauma, or where there might be sort of safety being compromised. Then what happens in the body is that the root chakra starts to contract at the tailbone region of the body to self-preserve. And this is where the overly empathic experience comes in as a template for sensitive people, which is that the second chakra has to do the root chakra's work. And what it does is it opens up and starts to pay attention to what everybody else is doing outside of us in order for us to meet those needs people-pleasing, codependency, over-responsibility, any of that happens in order to stay safe, because safety is compromised in the innate self. And so that pattern, we call it hypervigilance. It repeats itself over and over again in life. And that's what happens for the overly empathic empath.
Well, one of the things that I read was that if you go back hundreds of years ago, that people were much more empathic because they needed to be. Is that correct? And so, but it sounds like what I hear you saying is, or what also what I read was that over time, by changing the way in which we live, we've caused our bodies to sort of lose this or not use it to the point. It's, well, I guess it would be, and it's, they say, you know, if you know, whatever you don't use, you lose. Is that a lot of why we aren't as empathic as humans today as we might have been hundreds of years ago?
Well, in some ways, you know, it's hard to say. I think sometimes we are very empathic. I think because there is a lot of energy in the field right now, I think people are having overly empathic experiences, whether or not people identify as empaths. Everybody feels something today. You know, I do believe that every generation and every generation brings in another level of consciousness. And there are past generations that needed certain levels of survival, they were more, you know, in some ways more grounded than mm-hmm. we are today, and might be having certain levels of attachment or certain ways of surviving in the world that were appropriate for those times. And now we're in a time period where, you know, we're processing a lot of intergenerational, you know, past history that we might be carrying in our energy body. And we're living in current times that is essentially erupting with a lot of old systems that don't work anymore, that are dismantling. And so we're experiencing this outer system chaos, right. And it's triggering our inner personal pieces and wounds and aspects to heal inside ourselves. And some of that is carried through time, and some of that is our own personal experiences in this lifetime. I certainly feel that empaths are waking up to their gift more so, or maybe we just have a language for it now.
Mm-hmm. I get it. You mentioned earlier about being oversensitive or over-empathic, and part of that being a people pleaser. I think I'm one of the people that's guilty of that. And as you said, it may have started with something very, very early on. How does one balance that? You know, not that you have to get rid of it, but how do you balance that in such a way that you're still taking care of yourself as well?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I love that you use the word balance, because pleasing people, helping people, caring for people, wanting to make a difference in the world, those are powers of the empath or the sensitive being, someone who wants to have legacy and imprint and impact on this planet. I mean, we want that. Those are the empaths that are leading us in the world right now. Where it gets difficult is when we disconnect from ourselves, when we override our body's instincts, when we override our intuition, when we've sort of, what I say, come up too high in the body and we disconnect from the physical body or from the lower chakras that gives us that need for sustenance and nourishment and replenishment, which sometimes is just sleep or walking out in nature or going to see the mm-hmm. sunrise or being with children or whatever it might be for people. When we're elevated in our body and we're not meeting the body's needs, that's when we disconnect from ourselves, and that people-pleasing turns into what we might say is a negative experience because we're losing ourselves in it.
Now, when did you realize that you were an empath, and how did you... How did you find out? How does one find out that you have maybe more abilities than others?
Yeah. You know, I actually didn't call myself an empath. I mean, for, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, I started to realize like, oh, I am empathic too. I always considered myself an intuitive, and I came into it pretty young. I was an intuitive healer for 26 years. And early on, I was having anxiety. I was having panic attacks. I had a nervous breakdown. I thought there was something wrong with me. And I came to understand that I was highly intuitive, and I had what I call in the book, four aspects of intuition. So I could see and I could hear and I could feel and I could know, which means absolute overwhelm. It sounds great, but it's an overwhelming experience. And I started to turn to my gift and work with people and help people with the gift that I had. But what I really put together is as trauma was emerging in the field on the collective level, and there was really more conversation about trauma in the world, it started to stir for people their inner permission to bring it to the surface, to work with it, to process it. And as that happened, it's like the wounds are starting to rise and the sensitivities are starting to rise. And so empaths were emerging saying, I'm sensitive, I'm overly empathic, I'm debilitated by this. Mm-hmm. You know, what do I do? And I had such a deep study and awareness of the energetic body that, you know, I knew that if we understood what was happening in our energetic system, then people would not feel, you know, if they had this awareness or could work with it, it wouldn't leave them feeling powerless or debilitated, rather have some tools and framework for what's happening. And that could support people in being in their power.
So what is the difference then of an intuitive and an empath?
Yeah, they could overlap. Mm-hmm. So again, in my book, I talk about the four aspects: seeing, hearing, feeling, and knowing. Mm-hmm. The upper body are the upper clairs, the seeing and the hearing, clairvoyant, clairaudient. They might be more like the mediums or psychics, might be more upper body intuitives. The lower body intuitives are more the empaths or the claircognizant people. They know because they know because they know, or they feel the energy around them. And so the empathic intuition relates to the clairsentient sense, which is feeling energy. So someone who is empathic is also a clairsentient intuitive. They have both in their body. They feel energy intuitively. It takes a little training and understanding on how to work with it, but not every empath or lower body intuitive is upper body intuitive, and vice versa. And some people are all of them. Some people are all four clairs.
Wow. Now, one of the things you mentioned a little bit ago when you talked about people being more grounded, you mentioned in the book something about grounding, and it's something that I've done for years. But can you share why it is important and why it supports our healthy intuition?
The embodiment, being embodied.
Yeah.
It is the process of being embodied in our energy system is that literally our soul is connecting to the first two chakras of the body. So, and what we're allowing for that to do is that when our soul is really anchored in our root chakra at the tailbone, mm-hmm. literally that power center can unfurl and relax our nervous system and allow flow to come down through our legs and through our feet. And that embodiment process it coincides with grounding and connecting mm-hmm. to the earth and feeling that sense of what I like to visualize is the grounding cord from our hip down deep into the center of the earth, and imagining this wide tree trunk that secures our body. We can also imagine roots growing from the soles of our feet and allowing earth connection to open there. But it's this whole system. I mean, grounding and embodiment is this system of the root chakra unfurling, safety and trust, the, you know, pathways of the legs opening up, grounding cords strong and connected, and that we're you know, sort of in many ways supported by nature also does that process for us too, the more we immerse in it.
All right. We have a question that's coming in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time to email or instant message these type of questions. And lots of times we get them from teachers who are working during the day. And so they'll send them in sometimes the night before or sometimes like this here in the morning. This one reads, I have a dear friend who has been a spiritual teacher for 30 years. Several months ago, she called very excited about a man she met online from London who was going to make her a great deal of money. She was so enamored with him that she gave him $60,000, saying it was based on her intuition. There's been no contract, no paperwork whatsoever, and I almost lost our friendship when I warned her that I was getting a huge warning about the situation. Unfortunately, as I predicted, it turned out to be a scam. So my point is, how do you help a friend who is blinded by their emotions, or was this just one of her life lessons? And this is from Joel in California.
Well, you know, Joel, I think you did the right thing, and that's all you can do is state, if it's a dear friend, you know, you can, and you want to protect them, it is a matter of just communicating what your experience is. And unfortunately, we can't always, you know, bring the horse to water and make them drink at all of it. So it's unfortunate that it happened. And it sounds to me like that was a lesson for your friend to learn, a very expensive lesson, but it was a lesson. I mean, I think you did what you could do, and now it's sitting in the aftermath of the feelings of how it, you know, you wish it would have gone differently, and it's a disappointment. So yeah.
We are speaking with Wendy DeRosa. Her book is Becoming an Empowered Empath: Setting Clear Boundaries and Embodying One's Intuition. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You're watching or listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You are listening to or watching Answers Network. My guest is Wendy DeRosa, and we're talking about being an empath. And Wendy, in your book, you state that empaths experience the world through their intuition. So tell us more about what this looks like on a daily basis for you.
That's a good question. So on a daily basis, I mean, I certainly, you know, I can feel the people in my intimate environment, which would be my family, my child. I'm also very aware of the collective. I intuitively will feel that the collective is in my awareness so much because there is such a, it gives me inspiration on how I can turn around and support in different ways. And so I, you know, in my world, that might be, I'm going to make a video that I think might be beneficial for my, you know, social media feed, or I'm going to write this article, or I'm going to, you know, offer a piece out based on what I feel might help somebody in their day to day. So I certainly intuitively feel what's going on in the collective. I also have to take care of my energy. So I might, you know, there's energetic tools I'll do. I will send people back, send their energy back to them, even if they're my beloved students or my, you know, people that I love dearly. I will make sure that people are in their own energy bodies, that my energy body is protected and safe. I'll do this, you know, in the morning. I'll do it before I go to sleep. I'll do it midday. I'll ground myself a whole bunch of times during the day, as often as I can. I'll breathe into my central channel. I'll breathe into my grounding cord just to help me come back to my own body, because I believe we're just in an atmosphere where anything can take us off our center these days. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder to stay grounded than it is to get swept away. And so the work is, how do I stay grounded and centered? So I do implement energetic tools to help myself stay centered and grounded as I'm sort of allowing myself to feel into what's going on, so that I might show up in a way that might be supportive.
You know, we've talked a little bit about what it is. I'd also like to talk a little bit about what being an empath or an intuitive is not. And the reason is I was thinking about, there was a time some years ago that I felt something very, very odd every time I was around a particular person. But I couldn't explain it. I just felt like as soon as they became part of the conversation or part of the group, I had this incredibly strong feeling about their presence. And sometime later, one of their friends said that person no longer hung around or whatever. And they said it was because they felt like every time they were around me that I was reading their mind. Which I didn't feel like I was, but yet I was feeling something. But let's talk about what it's not, because I, you know, this thing about, they can read minds or whatever. I think there's some information that's out there that might not be accurate. So let's share a little bit about what it's not.
Yes. So empathic intuition is actually not clairvoyance. It's not the higher guidance, the mediumship, the connection to spirit world, the transference that might happen for some people on that spirit realm. It's also not, like you're saying, it's not the mind reading. Although I think that's someone's framework for what mind reading might be. I don't know if I know that the same way that it's intended. There's also something interesting about, you know, projection. And if someone feels uncomfortable in, you know, my presence, and I have had people say to me, I don't know that I want to be friends with you because I'm afraid you might be checking me out intuitively and energy. And I have very strong professional boundaries around my work. Like, I would never do that. But they told me years later, after we did become friends, I didn't want to get close to you because I thought you would read me all the time. And I thought, oh my goodness, no way that it would never do that. But that being, sometimes there's that fear, that uncomfortability we sit with when we're in a presence of somebody, and we might make it about the other person instead of sitting with our own feelings and saying, wow, you know, what is this? You know, what is this about this person's energy, and how do I want to be in myself around that? There's some examples of what it might not be.
You know, first of all, I'm glad that you brought up the part in regards to turning it off, because I would think that it would be exhausting to be on all the time. And I know I've told people that just from the investigation part of me, of saying, no, I really do turn it off. I don't want to have it on all the time. And I would imagine the same is for you. So share a little bit about what the boundaries are, you know, that you establish for yourself and why that's important.
Yeah. Well, the empath is the healer. I mean, that is an archetype of the empath. And so we don't want to be going out there healing everywhere, everyone, all the time. I mean, I learned for myself long ago from my teacher as I was training as a healer is that you do it in a professional space. You don't go out into the world to be open. It's you sit down and you ground yourself and you do an opening and you tune in. And that's when you utilize that gift. Otherwise you're all over the place with it. And so that the boundaries would be grounding, pulling your energy back into your body. Anyone who's listening to this, specifically the lower chakras, I'm taking my hands in front of my lower belly and just drawing that energy back into my body. So I'm calling my energy back into my body. I also really believe in the power of radiance, which is the central channel of our body, this beautiful, I call it the pillar of light, and light flowing through it and in a way that creates a radiance and a filling ourselves up with our energy in our own body coming from the center of the body. So we're less working at the periphery, more at the center of our body. So when we stand in our presence and our radiance, we aren't necessarily attuned to everything on the periphery to where we would need to be reading energy, you know, without permission. It's about grounding and staying centered in ourselves again. So you can also ask for a bubble of light around you to stay centered. And there's a few more tools I offer in the book too.
Yeah. Yes. And I've been reading the book, folks, and you really should check this book out. It is, I felt it very enlightening. And it actually made me smile. I mean, in the sense of, you know, there are some books where I feel like I'm reading it to learn, but I'm not necessarily smiling and enjoying it while I'm learning. But with this, I sort of felt I'm really enjoying this and I'm feeling better about things. So again, folks, if you get a chance, please do pick up the book. Now, there was another thing I was going to touch on. In regards to, you mentioned trauma earlier. Trauma is something now that, you know, a lot of people are going through. But let's talk about how trauma affects our energy fields and why it's so important to honor the trauma healing process rather than just ignoring it.
Absolutely. So again, I was talking about the lower three chakras of the body, mm-hmm. which is where we house energetically so much of our humanity, and that includes our history, and that includes history from this life, and that includes history we might have taken into our body intergenerationally. It might have been passed down through the line. We might have carried it in on a soul level. And so in the lower half of our energy body, this essentially the trauma imprints that we might hold there energetically, if they're not processed, if they're not healed, then what ends up happening is spirit level is the spirit will sit higher up in the body and we will go through life from basically the base of the heart upward, just fine, actually, until we have one rug after another being pulled out from under us, or we're having relationship issues, or, you know, there's some situation that's going on the humanity level that we're not able to deal with or cope with. And that when we do, it brings us back down into our body and into that pain that we hold. This in spiritual work, there's a term called spiritual bypass. Spiritual bypass on an energetic body means that I am living from the base of the heart upward and I'm not embodying, processing the traumas that are held in the lower half of the body. And some may say, well, I don't have trauma. I didn't have a history of trauma, but there is something always to explore about our embodiment, our power and our humanity in the lower half of our body, especially when we're in a time period where we are evolving and systems are dismantling, like patriarchal systems or any type of systems that we're in right now. They're dismantling. And so they're going to stir something in us, in our history. And so much when it comes down to trauma in our energy body, again, it brings us to first, second, and third chakras. And what are we holding subconsciously that we need to bring love, attention, and care to so that we can heal? And again, our soul can come back down and we can embody more of our power here on this earth.
Okay. So what you're saying is that we actually can inherit energy imprints from our families.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can be something that we've inherited. So, I mean, it's interesting. So what is the most important thing that someone who wants to stop taking on other people's energy needs to know? What would be the one most important thing, be it from family or from just our surroundings?
Mm-hmm. Grounding, first of all, is to ground yourself. It's also being triggered by other people's energy is a really good invitation to look inside and say, how am I allowing, or what is this trigger pointing to in me that I need to see in myself? Essentially, where am I not stepping more fully and embodying more the fullness of me? You know, it's not just about the people on the outside. It's not just their energy. It's our energy. How are we not holding the fullness of our presence in our body?
And we've got another question coming in. This one reads, I'm hearing from various sources in our spiritual community that the COVID mRNA vaccines could seriously damage the body's natural RNA and immune system functionality. Do you believe these vaccines could harm not just the physical, but the spiritual pathways, such as our chakra systems as well? And this is from Virginia in Florida.
Mm-hmm. So personally, I do not. I personally believe that the radiance, the presence of our health, and, or let me say it this way, our health and well-being inside ourselves is bigger and more expansive than the impact of any medicine. I mean, this is true of any medicine that we take in. I have many, many times taken, you know, I'm more of a natural person, but I'll turn to Western medicine, absolutely, if it's necessary and needed and there's a purpose for it. I also trust my intuition and my body's systems. And so I will hold the absolute wellness of my being in combination with any medicine that I might not need, whether it's a Western medicine or whether it's an herbal medicine. You know, there's just an inherent wellness that we hold, that we can hold in our body. And, you know, I guess in my experience, when I've looked at people's energy bodies, I have not seen the vaccine affect people's chakra systems.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That's very good to know. So one of the things that I like to touch on is, how can we make a positive difference in the world? And something like this, why aren't we teaching in schools? Why aren't we starting kids younger at being able to look at these things, to be able to self-regulate? Because I think now we have situations in which they're not being taught how to self-regulate. In fact, they're being told that you don't have to self-regulate, that somehow some outer force is going to do that for you. And I think this would be something, and especially now with what so many kids are going through right now, that why not provide something in the schools that could help them self-regulate to the point in which it's going to help them mentally, physically? What's your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is it's going to be the empaths who are going to make this happen on a wider scale in the schools. I mean, and I have a 6-year-old, and I get this deeply, your question. And I mean, I do believe that there are, in terms of self-regulating, what can we implement into the schools that are helping kids connect more to themselves and calm their nervous systems and find more sense of self. Part of that comes down to how to parent intuitive or empathic children. And I, you know, one day I'll write a book about this, but I'll say now that, you know, really nurturing and supporting children in their emotions is absolutely training for their nervous systems and for their empathic abilities later in life, for their ability to stay with themselves throughout their lives. So we were raised, I was raised in the generation where nobody knew what to do with children who had big emotions. They were just punished for it. You know, we're told we're meant to be seen, not heard. We were punished when there was anger.
Well, or they were given Ritalin.
Yeah. You know? Absolutely medicated. Absolutely. Yeah. So how do we, as the adults, how do we become okay with our emotions and our inner children's emotions, inner child's emotions, enough for us to be able to have more capacity for children in their emotions? You know, that's really what they're challenging our bigness. How are we, you know, their bigness is challenging us to be able to stay centered. And we model that regulation as we do it in ourselves. We give them tools doing it, you know, in themselves. It's modeling. You know, I think that modeling can continue in the schools.
Well, yeah, I just think that it's a shame, because I think that it's one of the many things that we're stifling in them rather than allowing them to feel it, to experience it, and to go with it if that's what's working for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I do this with my daughter where she's angry and she throws something at me. And I'll say, "You feel like throwing something, don't you?" And she says, "Yeah, I'm so mad." And I say, "Okay, let's go outside and throw things. Let's just get some rocks and throw as far as you want." And I let her have her anger and express her anger, but we're in a, what I call a controlled environment, a therapeutic environment, where she's able to get the emotion out and not be shamed through it.
Now, and then, so how does this, well, first of all, how can we kind of reverse some of this stuff, but how does this talk, how does this tie into our inherited belief systems and how they're affecting our lives, so that we are then passing that on to the next generation? And how can we start making a shift?
So I am a big fan of inner child work. And being able to connect to ourselves, to our own inner children, around the belief systems that we inherited and the emotions that we might be stifling still as adults. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're still processing pockets of time that or experiences that happened way back when, and we stuffed it and it's stuck it. And where did that come from? It came out of nowhere. But that's a fantastic release experience. And when we can imagine that our inner child is in a room and we give our inner child permission to dance, sing, yell, scream, kick, play, jump, everything that's so inherent to a child to have full expression, we can actually start shifting in ourselves, because we're becoming more whole. Ultimately, we're walking into the world more integrated as we start meeting these inner, you know, this inner self, this inner child's unmet needs. That's one way.
As you were saying that, one of the things that was bringing a smile to my face was that I just had a birthday recently, and one of my sons said, "Okay, Dad, so have you decided what you're going to do when you grow up?" So I think there's a little inner child still hanging out there.
The inner child will forever dream, wherever. Yes. So much potential.
Now, one of the things in the book that you refer to is the central channel. So tell us about the central channel that you refer to, or I think you also said the pillar of light. And why is that so important for us or anyone as empaths?
The central channel is a meridian in the body that runs in front of the spine. The spine is pretty far back in the body. So essentially the central channel is in the center of the body. And through it is ultimately in the center of it is us and like our soul and divine nature, the God, grace, divinity, whatever word is resonates. And that illuminosity of light, when we allow more illuminance in the central channel of our body, the overflow of that light, which we can visualize, which we can call in from the divine above us, we can call in from the earth below us, it sources the channel and the overflow forms the pillar. It's a radiance beyond the central channel. And that is the center of our being. That's our true light, our true self, our true nature. More on the periphery is our ego consciousness, which is our conditioning, what we were raised with, you know, what how we were like, you know, told to be in the world. And so that, you know, as we allow more of our soul's light and our inner radiance through the body, we allow more of our soul to take up space, more of our truth to take up space in our being.
So, and I was just checking, we're actually starting to run short time. What is the best way for anybody that wants to get in touch with you if they want to get more information or they want to start maybe seeing about getting some training to see if they can find out more about their own intuition?
Sure. I have two websites. I run the School of Intuitive Studies. So that's schoolofintuitivestudies.com. And then my website, wendyderosa.com. So all my trainings are at the school and you can find my books at either places. But wendyderosa.com has some direct information.
All right, that's great. And so in closing, one of the things I like to do is I want to hand you the magic wand. And in handing you the magic wand, what is the one thing that you want to do where you feel you can make the biggest positive difference in the world?
I believe that how I want to make a positive difference in the world is to help people understand what's happening in their energetic system that would support their presence, their being, their intuition, their actualization of self in the world. And I want to help the planet too, climate.
Yes. but I think what you're saying is that if you learn more about yourself and who you are and what you're capable of inside, you're going to make better decisions on those other things.
Absolutely.
You're going to get it.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I love it. So, Wendy, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a pleasure for me and I think for many of our listeners as well. So for everybody out there, again, if you were driving and you couldn't write that down, if you go to the answers.network site, we will have all of Wendy's information there, how to find the book or how to get her to her website.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we are joined by Bailey Gaddis to discuss her new book, Asking for a Pregnant Friend. Okay, it's 101 answers to questions women are too embarrassed to ask about pregnancy, childbirth, and motherhood. And please, when you get a chance, visit our website at answers.network, and you can go to the archives and you can look at all the past interviews, or better yet, just subscribe to the show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, I think it's UGETube, it's spelled UGETUBE. Check it out. And whatever popular podcast you listen to us on, if they don't have our show, contact them and tell them you want Answers Network. Now, if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know that I greatly appreciate it. So for everybody out there, listen to your intuition, be good human beings, and make a positive difference in someone's life. And let us know what you did and how it made you feel. And I'll start sharing some of those on the air each week. Until next week, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're reaching me here at Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.